Praise be Jesus and Mary. The gospel today places before us the call of St. Matthew as recorded by the evangelist himself in the 9th chapter of his gospel. This episode, I think, is always a mind and a heart check for those of us who are disciples of Jesus because it teaches us to be careful about how we judge others. St. Matthew was a publican, meaning a tax collector, one of the most despised groups of people in the first century Palestine. The tax collectors represented Roman rule and oppression, and they often abused their positions, exacting more money from the people than was necessary for their own personal gain. As far as modern-day parallels of groups that it's publicly acceptable to despise, the only ones I could think of were groups like the Nazis, the KKK, and maybe faithful Christians. So I think publicly those are the three groups that I could think of that you can despise them publicly, it's okay. Of course, there's no substantial connection between faithful Christians and Nazis and the KKK, but spiritual darkness in our culture doesn't permit a lot of people to make those distinctions. Now, certainly in the mind of many people in Israel, St. Matthew would have been lumped together with the crooked tax collectors, and he would have been shunned by a number of people who took seriously the need to be faithful to the law of Moses, like the Pharisees and the scribes who followed them. They shunned and had contempt for people like Matthew. But I doubt that St. Matthew himself was corrupt or he practiced extortion. I doubt that. You know, perhaps he wasn't an angel, but God, being God, looked beyond his flaws, and he saw Matthew's heart. God saw that his heart was good, and he chose him to be an apostle because of that. God doesn't judge by externals. He judges the heart. Well, and someone may ask, well, then why did Jesus choose Judas if God judges the heart? Well, I think he wanted to show us that just because someone is chosen, just because someone is a follower of Christ, that's not a guarantee. No, you have to cooperate with God's grace as well, which means you have to put your faith into practice. Otherwise, you're going to lose it. Otherwise, it's going to be gone. Saving faith, as the Protestants call it, saving faith is faith plus works. St. Paul says in Titus 1, verse 16, he says, there are those who, quote, profess that they know God, but they deny him in their works, says the apostle. And Jesus is clear in the Gospels that not everyone who calls him Lord will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only those who do the will of his heavenly Father, Matthew 7:21. That's a work, doing God's will. Faith without works is dead, adds the Apostle James in James 2:17. So either you lose it, either you use it or you lose it as far as the faith goes. Either you put it into practice or it'll get taken away from you, as was the case with Judas. Again, as far as a modern-day parallel with this calling of St. Matthew, perhaps it would be like Jesus calling one of the German SS officers in World War II to join him and to become one of his closest followers. Everyone would have been absolutely scandalized because of that, because of all the evil of the Nazis and the SS did. But the prudent person, before passing judgment, would stop and reflect and would say, you know, well, perhaps the Nazis and the SS were evil, but doesn't necessarily mean that everyone who was a Nazi or everyone who was a member of the SS was evil. No, God judges the hearts. Perhaps that's what we're dealing with in an analogous way with St. Matthew. I suspect that he, again, was a good apple amidst a rotten bunch. A rotten bunch which Jesus, nonetheless, still loved and sought to convert. So Jesus calls Matthew, he says to him, follow me, and Matthew responds immediately, and then holds a dinner and invites all of his friends, and he invites that rotten bunch, who are, of course, the tax collectors and sinners. Makes sense, those are the only people who would be willing to be seen and be friends with another tax collector. And he invites Jesus and his disciples as well to the dinner, and the super religious members of the town see it, and instead of praising God for his mercy, instead of thanking God that he actually looks on people with kindness, they're indignant. They're completely scandalized. In their own self-righteousness, the Pharisees and those like them had stopped seeing sinners as human beings. They had stopped seeing them as people in need of mercy. In need of mercy from God, obviously, but also in they They too should have had mercy towards sinners, but they didn't. They also failed one of the basic tests of the spiritual life, which is the test of self-knowledge. Knowledge of their own sinfulness, knowledge of their own unworthiness before God, knowledge of the subtlety of spiritual pride, knowledge of the fact that God will inevitably treat them as they've treated others during their life, as Jesus says in the gospel in different places. Jesus tells them, go and learn what this means. He says to those of us who are self-righteous, he says, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Matthew 9, verse 13. We need to learn to look on others with eyes of mercy because that's how God looks on you. You know, think of the person in the group of people whom you dislike the most, either for reasons of righteousness, because they offend God by their choices and behaviors, or for selfish reasons, just because I don't like that person. Think of the person or those group of people that you dislike the most. If you learn to look on them with eyes of mercy, I promise you that you'll actually change the world by doing that. You'll change the world. How? Well, simply because you'll have changed yourself. You'll have changed yourself. If I change myself for the better, I change the world. So let's be careful in our judgments regarding other people, even people who right now are clearly not on God's side, because among them there are no doubt some future saints. Today they're the enemies of the church, but tomorrow, after Our Lady has opened their hearts, they'll become fierce defenders of goodness and fierce defenders of the love of God. So perhaps all they need is for someone to look on them with God's eyes of mercy, as Jesus did when he called the tax collector Matthew. Jesus says in the gospel, for as you judge, so will you be judged, and the measure with which you measure will be measured out to you. Matthew 7, verse 2. And St. James, again in his New Testament letter, adds, for judgment is merciless to the one who has shown no mercy, but mercy triumphs over judgment. James 2, verse 13. So let's ask the Mother of Mercy to give us her eyes and her heart of mercy in the way that we judge others, whoever they may be. We'll change the world if we learn to change ourselves in this way. Praise be Jesus and Mary.